The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Welcome back. Wednesday has arrived. We appreciate all of you being with us for these next couple of hours. We have a lot to keep you busy with. Your phone calls, of course, a number of guests momentarily. Let's get you updated with some of the headlines of the day. And it seems like the Pac-12 is always in the news, and they're always unlikely to reach a media deal. Georgia quarterback battle continues to heat up. Most people believe they know who the starter will be, but we can't tell you yet because we have a four-hour show to do. A couple of coaches, including Hugh Freeze, have suggested spring games should happen instead of these glorified scrimmages. Andy Staples has some thoughts on that, and we will speak to him shortly. Eight-game schedule in the SEC, you better watch out, according to a guest that will be joining us momentarily. And are you in the market to buy some jet skis? Lane Kiffin has some for sale. He's not doing well enough with $9 million a year at Ole Miss. He's just too busy because he's coaching. And if you believe all that, I've got some swampland to sell you. Jeremy Pruitt is also in the news. When is he not in the news in Knoxville? When won't he be in the news is what many Tennessee fans are asking. Speaking of that, John Adams, who covers the Vols and has for just a couple of years now for the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, always great to have you on. I want to talk about your column in a minute, but Jeremy Pruitt, about to be back in the public spotlight with the situation in the NCAA situation. Good afternoon, and tell us what you know about where we are in this case and when will we quit hearing about it?
Well, when will you quit hearing about it? I have no idea. This thing has just gone on now for years, seemingly endless, but supposedly Jeremy Pruitt will get his day in court. I'd like to be a fly on that wall. I don't know what he's going to say, that maybe the babysitter made him do it, or his wife was the mastermind of this whole cheating venture. I really don't know what he can say, and I also wonder, since the NCAA made a big point a while back, about it doesn't want to punish people who didn't commit the crimes. In other words, is the coach and assistant coaches and the babysitter and the wife are all breaking NCAA rules? Well, let's punish them, but we want to leave the people that didn't commit the crimes, the players that remained behind, the new coaches, the new administrators. I don't see how they can do much to Tennessee, but there's speculation out there that maybe it will. I don't know how Jeremy Pruitt could sell anybody on that, but I don't know the collective intellect of the people who will be quizzing him.
Finally, on that subject, John, because it's a tired subject in Knoxville, Tennessee people can't feel good, though, that this is still not settled. They've done about everything you can possibly do. You've been watching it on a minute-to-minute basis. Give us what you hear from them and what they're thinking about and what ultimately could happen to the university in a case that they've pretty well thrown everybody overboard and are still not in the clear yet, unless I'm missing something.
Well, Paul, I think the University of Tennessee did everything it could. It basically turned itself in. It provided the NCAA all the evidence it needed. It just opened up the doors and said, come on in, take a look. Here's what we got. Here's what we did. Chancellor Donde Plowman was very explicit about this. These were severe penalties, should be severe penalties. She said there were severe acts of criminal activity from an NCAA perspective, that this wasn't just your garden variety rules breaking. I don't know. Again, I don't see without Tennessee being so open about this and so forthcoming, I don't think the NCAA would have had a case. And I think it has to consider all that in punishing Tennessee. And I'm not, I've never been accused of being soft on crime when it comes to the NCAA, but I just think Tennessee pretty much did all the work, and I think the NCAA needs to give that a whole lot of importance. And again, I don't know what how much Jeremy Pruitt can say in his defense. I think the one weakness Tennessee might have was that its athletic director at the time, Philip Fulmer, it sort of let him go. He said he wasn't involved with this. So it's basically cleared him. It gives him $1 million-plus severance package, and he goes his own way, and he basically retired. But he's supposed to be overseeing the football program. He was out there at practice. He was heavily involved with, you know, seemingly with monitoring the X's and O's involved with the football program. So you would think he had a real finger on this pulse of the football program. And I would think, so does that fall under institutional control? I don't think the people above him did anything wrong. I think they did the best they could to correct all this. And maybe they'll just say, well, we didn't hire this guy as AD. He really wasn't an AD. He was kind of a token AD. He's just a former football coach, and he just didn't know how to manage it. But we didn't hire the guy. That, to me, would be their counterpoint to this.
All of that coming up. Another big story on the horizon is what's the future of the SEC from a scheduling standpoint. John, we are under 2 months before the league meets in Destin, where this was supposed to have been settled by then. We'll be about a year out at that point to Texas and Oklahoma coming into the SEC. What do you know, and what are your thoughts on 8 versus 9?
Well, Paul, honestly, my favorite season was 2020, except there wasn't anybody in the stands. Not enough people because of COVID. But I loved SEC games every week, Saturday after Saturday. So I'd like to see a 10-game SEC schedule when you go to the 16-game schedule. I know that's not happening, but Blake Todmeyer and I, my colleague, we did our SEC podcast this week on SEC Unfiltered, and we discussed that because there seems to be some speculation that there are some people that still don't want to go to 9 games. And I just don't see how you can do that. I think it would be the backlash would be severe if the SEC expanded to 16 teams. You know, everything about the SEC, I mean, its motto is the SEC just means more. So you're going to go to 16 teams and then give them less, give them fewer SEC games? It just wouldn't make sense. I can understand the reasoning behind it from a coach's standpoint. Particularly those who are trying to squeeze their way into a bowl eligibility situation. But when you go to a 12-team playoff, I think it's going to be important. The strength of the schedule could be very paramount. And I think you need to be saying the SEC, you say, well, we've got 9 games just like the Big Ten does. But what if you only play 8? And the selection committee looks at that and says, well, you know, they could have helped themselves with strengthening their schedule and playing 9 more games, but they didn't want to do it. I think it would be a big mistake. I don't really believe that, despite all the speculation and despite the fact that some coaches might not want that, I don't believe Greg Sankey would let that happen. The commissioner, he knows the big picture. He knows what's at stake here. So I think it'll end up being 9 games. But I do think it's curious that some coaches are still dragging their feet on this.
It is pretty amazing. John, before you go, let me be that guy that runs you down on the street in Knoxville every day and says, hey, John, how are we going to be this year? Meaning, what is Tennessee's record going to be? This is a hard thing to predict based on the last couple of years, but what do you think?
Well, I tell you, my answer is completely different now than it used to be. You know, for like 10 years in a row, if they asked me that, I'd just say, good luck. You know, maybe you'll get in the tax slayer bowl. But no, I think Tennessee can be just as good as it was last year when it ended up being 11-2 after a win over Clemson in the Orange Bowl. I think Josh Heupel is such a good offensive coach. He's going to get good quarterback play, even though he lost Hendon Hooker. So I think Tennessee fans can look forward to a really good year.
John, I didn't think I'd make it to this point in my career and hear a positive John Adams on the Vols, but that's the world we are all living in. John, always great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
John Adams joining us from Knoxville. We have a number of other guests. We mentioned Andy Staples earlier talking about spring football. He'll join us in a couple of minutes. Cole Kublik will be with us a little bit later on. And John Wilner on the mess that is the Pac, whatever. And we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
All of you being here on a Wednesday, let's get to the calls. And John starts it off in Louisville. Hey, John.
Adams, John, covered the Tennessee issue from soup to nuts, don't you?
Exactly.
And by the way, that was a classy concession speech by legend. I do think he needs to honor Cat Daddy with a black hat, and I thought Cat Daddy was even better with his gracious acceptance speech.
Yeah, I thought Legend was fantastic. It's one of the better concession speeches I've heard, and I have not heard many good ones.
And Cat Daddy, his humbleness reminds me of Handsome Joe. Hey, that was contrasted sharply by the two curmudgeons out of Ohio and Alabama, don't you think, with their negative calls?
Yeah, I there's so many curmudgeons, I have to try to remember which one we're talking about, but I think I have it down.
Columbus and Tuscaloosa.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Did I hear you right? Did you, the one you call the busybody and broken record, did you tell him he was the most hated caller?
Now, John, if I'm going to have to be held, I refuse to be fact checked on this show.
Okay.
I mean, there's.
Well, we all.
You know, I'm watching. I guess I just watch too much television. I just thought you could say whatever you want.
Well, we all knew a Jeff in school. You remember when you get on the bus?
Oh, sure.
And everybody would put their book bag next to him, so Jeff would have to go to the back of the bus.
I think what you said there. I mean. Every time every throughout life you run into people who remind you of someone, but Jeff was every man. I mean, Jeff was that guy that everybody hated in whatever grade it was.
Yeah, and when you had dodgeball, when the gym teacher would blow the whistle, both sides would throw their balls at him, so he'd leave the gym, right?
Yeah, exactly, and. The thing that's so interesting about Jeff, he has one fan in the world.
Oh, I know.
I mean, and of all the
people.
And that guy has no fans.
I know. Hey, Paul, on the Jeremy Pruitt item, obviously he's guiltier than sin and very egregious in what he did. But in respect to Nick Saban, why in the world would he want him on his staff? I mean, he hasn't said anything, but everybody says, well, he's coming to Alabama when he's released from prison or whatever.
Well, one thing you learn about Saban, he's a creature of habit. And, you know, while we give him all this credit for changing with the times, he always goes back to the same people. I mean, how many times? I mean, this is Kevin Steele's third time on his staff. Others have gone back. I mean, Pruitt's been there a couple of times. Pruitt would be there three times. So he's at an age, I think, where he does not want to have to teach the playbook to someone else. So he prefers, especially on the defensive side, which he runs anyway, having somebody that he's comfortable with and can see eye to eye with without having to explain. I mean, I think that had to be the deal with Pete Golding. Pete Golding by no means was an elite defensive coordinator, but he did what Saban wanted him to do.
Like comfort food, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, I mean, I understand it. And I think Saban's at a point where he really believes, too, that Jeremy Pruitt is an upper echelon DC. I think he believes Pruitt is a better coach than Kevin Steele at this point, and that's why he wanted him. And then I think he tried to get him to be even in the Butch Jones room where he was an analyst, but he couldn't even pull that off. And maybe once Jeremy Pruitt gets through this hearing, he'll be eligible. But right now, he's hands off, no fly zone.
He'll be eligible in about 5 years, Paul. And I agree. Kevin Steele and his backup Charlie Strong are just underwhelming hires.
I like Steele personally, and I think he's not going to damage the operation because he's very competent. But he's not an outside the box hire. Now Tommy Rees, I don't know. I think he's one of the most mysterious hires of the offseason. We want to blast Kirby Smart for Mike Bobo, who's pretty well. He's not exciting, but he's pretty well proven. Tommy Rees is not.
No, I think it's going to be more interesting than who's starting at quarterback. Hey, I look forward to the Archbishop on Friday, Paul.
Thank you. He will be with us Friday afternoon. Rick is up next in Houston. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Paul. Well, you've had your daily interview by John now.
We have.
A couple of show-related questions and then one sports-related question.
Okay.
The first one's not really a question, but, you know, I'm really happy that Cat Daddy won. And I think one of the reasons that he did is the man is almost always positive. And I just hardly ever remember a phone call that after it, I didn't feel better about things. I think he's tremendous. He's always up, unlike some of the other callers. And then yesterday when Susie called in and was talking about authors, I wanted to ask you, who are your favorite authors?
Yeah, I mean, I used to read a lot of nonfiction, I guess because I deal with this every day in the real world. I want to get away. So I'm pretty much into espionage, stuff like that, stuff that I would never be involved with. And it's not realistic, but it gets me out of the sports genre.
Yes, sir. Did you have you read the man? You know, of course, he passed away a number of years ago, but probably my all-time favorite author in that genre would be Robert Ludlum.
In fact, Rick, he was my favorite author while he was alive. I read The Bourne Identity, I don't know, 40 years ago, and was captivated by it. It was one of my favorite books, and then read every other book that he wrote. And I realize a lot of people know that book from the Matt Damon movie. But he was probably my favorite now is a guy named Daniel Silva. I think he is.
Daniel Silva's great.
I think he's probably the best in terms of just capturing the moment. There are a lot of other good ones, but that's where I would land if I had to read one.
You know, right now, a guy I really like, I think he's got, he's had a number of books, but in this particular series, I think he's sitting at about seven. His name's Greg Hurwitz, and the series is the Orphan X series.
Okay.
If you get a chance, you might check
it
out.
In fact, I have not, I've seen his, you know, there aren't many great bookstores, but whenever I'm in a big city, I will go into one, and I've seen his books 1,000 times, and I've never read one. But I will take you up on that.
Oh, that's great. Hey, so sports-related question. The other day, Brody Miller had his LSU mailbag on The Athletic, and someone asked him to name the 10 greatest LSU athletes, and he did. And I agree with a lot of them and think that there was a couple that were in there that could have been replaced by others. But I wanted to ask you, in each of the major sports, who do you think are the greatest players in each of those from the University of Tennessee? And I'll let you go.
Yeah, that's a great question, specific on that. I think Peyton clearly retires a trophy in football. You know, basketball is a little more complex because, I probably go back to my era with Bernard King. You know, baseball, it probably Helton, maybe a couple other guys have emerged in recent years. Let me go to a break. We have Andy Staples coming back. I'll try to answer that question in more detail in a few minutes. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Welcome back, and it is always great to say hello to Andy Staples from The Athletic. Andy, first of all, it's good to have you on, and a lot to talk about. We got spring games galore. We've just ended a couple of seasons. I want to ask you about something that you wrote about this week, and I think Hugh Freeze mentioned it. He'll be on later in the week to talk about it as well. Is the idea of doing something more with these scrimmages, which used to be really exciting, and we all were glued to them, and now a lot of us are yawning on these Saturday afternoons.
Were we ever really that glued to the spring games? I defy that. See, I like it when Nick Saban's mic'd up during the spring game. That's fun. I can get into that as a viewer. But unless you are very into your team's depth chart, unless you are very interested in what's going on in the number two and number three spots in your team's depth chart, spring games aren't necessarily the most entertaining thing for you. But I liked what Hugh Freeze says, where, hey, let's go play somebody. Every other sport has exhibition games. And I know you say, well, the bowl games are exhibition. Not really. They count in the stats. They count in the standings. Or they don't count the standings, but they do count the stats. So why not have actual exhibition games? Now, Hugh brought up Auburn playing Troy, Alabama playing UAB. There's probably a little political freight to go with those particular matchups, but you could do that. Or also, let's say the SEC, or I don't know, added a conference game. And suddenly, you didn't have a spot for an FCS team that you wanted to play. Maybe an in-state team you wanted to help out. Maybe you're South Carolina and you wanted to play the Citadel or South Carolina State. Well, maybe there's a spot for that in the spring. And I love the idea of Alabama bringing North Dakota State down, because Nick Saban would absolutely love to watch North Dakota State starters wear out his backups so that he could spend the next 4 months saying, well, look what happened there. Look how hard you have to work.
And Andy, I have to ask you about that, because let's say something crazy happens in one of these games. Mm-hmm. Is that now going to be held against the school when we get to the real season?
Well, what do you mean crazy? Like the FCS team wins? Yes. Or somebody gets hurt? Because I mean, I've been at games where players have gotten. I covered a Florida spring game years ago where Ronald Powell tore his ACL, and it's like, oh, good Lord, this is the highest rated recruit in the history of recruits. And, you know, he's looking to have a good season, and now he's done. So I mean, it happens. There is an injury risk, but the losing the game thing, I actually think it's probably, I'll bring up my South Carolina Citadel example again, because that happened a few years ago where Citadel beat South Carolina. If they beat you in the spring, it's probably not as bad as if they beat you in the fall. Just spitballing there.
Andy, on that subject, if you're ever looking for a rainy day column, call me, because I'll try not to spend too much time on this. But we were doing SEC Nation. That was the off week. There was nowhere to go. It was, as you can imagine. And I don't remember what happened, but somebody who was supposed to – it was – by the way, the game was scheduled for the SEC alternate channel. I mean, it's not like, you know, prime time. And they asked me at the last minute, is there any chance you could hang around and be the sideline reporter? I said, and I said, really? And they said, you know, don't ask like real questions either. Just, you know, good game, coach.
I want you breaking down the triple option Cole Kubelik style in a game like that. I need to see.
So we spent had a 3-hour meeting the night before talking about all the things that we would be talking about after the game was a blowout. And Citadel was ahead at halftime. So I'm out to go interview the Citadel guy, coach. I don't remember his name.
Coach Higgins.
Okay. The year before, Citadel had played FSU in a game. And I was on SportsCenter, and I said, this is the big, you know, why is FSU playing a joke of a team like the Citadel? So I walk up to the guy, and I said, Coach, first half, what do you think? I mean, he like blew me off like I was, he had never forgotten that. So when I had to go interview him after the game, I can't tell you how tense, the guy just won the biggest game of his life, and he barely gave me the time of day. And it was a very forgettable experience. So thanks for bringing up Citadel in South Carolina. That was the year, that was Spurrier's last season, I believe.
I believe he'd already resigned at that point. He may have seen what was coming. Yeah. So, yeah, I apologize for that. And as actually, it was Mike Houston that year. Kevin Higgins had already retired at that point. So that is, bad memories. And look, you know, like my alma mater got beat by Georgia Southern in 2013, when Georgia Southern was still in the FCS. It happens, but I like Hugh Freeze's idea of having an actually competitive situation, because a lot of times, especially with the way the rosters are going, if you're a first-year coach, you may be in the middle of a roster flip where before you even got there, everybody entered the portal, and now you're dealing with a really thin roster. So you're not going to be able to have a full-on 11-on-11 scrimmage with regular football rules, and everybody hates the weird, you know, adjustments to the rules, or the defense gets 8 points for an interception or stuff like that. So this would be more fun. It would allow the players to hit somebody else. You can change it up however you want. As Hugh Freeze pointed out, you can control it however you want. You can make the quarterbacks off limits. I just think it'd be fun. And if nothing else, LSU Southern, the concert at halftime and postgame, human jukebox, Golden Band from Tigerland. Let's just make that happen. Forget everybody else. Let's just make that happen.
Well, it may be happening right now, since you're one of the most important voices in the game, and you're talking about it. So in terms of this spring, to get to what's really going on, not the games, but the battles and the coaching stories, what intrigues you the most right now?
I'm the Alabama quarterback situation. What's Alabama's offense going to look like? New offensive coordinator in Tommy Rees, Ty Simpson and Jalen Milroe, two different styles of quarterback. We got to see Jalen Milroe start a game against Texas A&M last year. You know, what will Alabama be? What will they look like? Because, you know, obviously they're always going to have very good players, but I feel like this is kind of the most mysterious they've been in a while, where we didn't really know what they were going to look like. So fascinated by that, fascinated by the quarterback competition at Ole Miss, because, you know, you get a Spencer Sanders, who was a 4-year starter at Oklahoma State coming in, but then you got Jackson Dart coming back. You've got Walker Howard, who is Brian Kelly danced for this guy. That's how important he was as a recruit at LSU, and now he's at Ole Miss. So there's a lot going on. It's certainly not very settled in terms of quarterbacks in the SEC.
You're in Gainesville, and we don't have a day or a week that goes by when somebody doesn't ask the Billy Napier question. I probably asked you already this spring, but I'll keep asking you until we see what's going to ultimately happen down there with the Gators. What are you hearing and what are you sensing?
Well, it seems like that they feel pretty confident in this team. And, you know, this is a group that is more Billy Napier's group that he brought in. And, you know, you saw a lot leave through the portal after last season. A lot of the latter era Dan Mullen recruits left through the portal. So this will probably be, you know, a team with more of Billy Napier's identity. The question is, you know, what's the offensive line going to look like? They want to run the ball, and they certainly have the backs to do that with Montrell Johnson and Trevor Etienne. But, you know, they go in thinking they're going to have three returning offensive line starters. And, well, Austin Barber started a bunch too, so it really was like four returning offensive line starters. But then Michael Tarquin and Ethan White decided to go to USC. So now they've got some younger guys, some guys that they brought in through the portal that they're trying to get figured out there. If that group turns out to be pretty good, this could be an offense that can gain a lot of yards on the ground, and you don't need Superman at quarterback. Now, the weird thing is they may have just had Superman at quarterback, but his numbers didn't match what his NFL draft position is going to be. Anthony Richardson probably going to be top 10 pick, but he didn't play like that last year for Florida. So, you know, what happens? Is it going to be Graham Mertz, the Wisconsin transfer, running the offense? It certainly seems that way. And really, it's that line needs to be good, needs to be able to control the game on the ground and give him a chance to just, if you can just be efficient in that case, that's how that offense works best. If you go back to when Billy Napier was at Louisiana Lafayette, that was a very efficient offense that liked to run the ball.
And finally, I'm Anthony Richardson, and you've seen and heard the same things that everyone has. What do you think has intrigued the NFL people so much, where he is literally near the top of some boards?
There has not been a person like this coming out as a quarterback. There's not been an athlete like this. He is a just measurable talking, not talking about performance or production, but from a sheer measurable standpoint, better athlete than Cam Newton coming out of Auburn. Now, obviously, Cam Newton coming out of Auburn led them to a national title, an undefeated season, won the Heisman Trophy. So we're not even comparing those two things. But that level of athlete with that level of arm does not come along every day and does not come along every 10 years even. So that's what they are just looking at, that going, okay, he's 20 years old. He started 13 games in his career. Whatever it is, I can fix it. And now there are going to be some teams that don't believe that. They're going to say, if he didn't immediately blossom in college, how's he going to do that here? But there are going to be other staffs that say, you know what? Whatever was the issue, we can take care of that with some time. I do hope for his sake, and I think that's what probably will happen, is the team that picks him will pick him with the idea that maybe they do a redshirt year situation, a lot like the Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes. That would be the best situation for him, because it allows him to get in, learn the offense. He doesn't get thrown in immediately. And remember, he is just 20 years old. So it might be that there's some growing left to do. And I know the next logical question is, well, couldn't he have done that at Florida? Yes, but if you're going to be a top 10 pick, you got to go.
Very good stuff. Great stuff from Andy Staples of The Athletic. Andy, always great to see you. We run to the break right now because we went a little bit long with Andy, but it was that riveting. We'll take a break. Your phone call's around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Welcome back as we continue here. Busy, busy opening hour. Let's continue with Randy in Mississippi. Hello, Randy.
Yes, sir. Mr. Feinbaum, I love your show.
Thank
you. And
thank
you for taking my call. And I'm a first-time caller.
Well, that is great to hear.
All right. I have had an idea in my head for a few months about how the SEC schedule should go, and I just want to throw it out there. And hopefully the SEC doesn't steal my idea without me copywriting it. But well, anyway.
We can handle that.
What I like with 16 teams is four fours. Four divisions of four teams, and you will, if you play at a school for 4 years, you will go to all 16 colleges. You will be at every university. Or if you stay there somewhere for 4 years. Here's how I recommend it.
Okay.
You start out west. I'm also keeping rivalries and geographical things intact here. Start out west with Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Missouri. Then you slide over and you have LSU, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State. Then you slide over to the east some more. You have Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, and either Kentucky or Vanderbilt could be thrown in there. And then you slide over a little more, and you have Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and either Kentucky or Vandy. I'm not sold on which one of them I would put where. But anyway, you would play 9 conference games and 3 FBS games. And those 9 conference games, you would play the other 3 in your division, and you would play 2 from each of the other 3 divisions. 1 year you're going to, let's say, Missouri. The next year they might be coming to your place. The next year you're going to A&M. Next year you might be coming to your place. Things like that. That's just my opinion. I've been thinking about that for a few months, and I'm going to hang up and see what you think about it, Mr. Feinbaum.
Well, thank you, Randy. I appreciate your thought on that, and I think it's an interesting, if not novel, thought. Right now, I believe they are pretty well locked into a 9-game format with 3 permanents and rotate the other 6, which would get everyone to every campus every 2 years as opposed to every 4 years. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. AC is up next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Mr. Feinbaum, you did something for everybody, the caller's bracket. Now I have something that I created. I want to challenge you and the team in a NBA and NHL playoff contest. So I created my own bracket. You can check it out. It's public. AC 2023. Feel free. I want to compete against all of them. Since this is out there in public, go ahead and enter it. Mr. Feinbaum, I want to challenge you, etc., etc. Hey, you did something for us, so I want to do something for you, Mr. Feinbaum. And Jim said you don't like him. Let's put it this way. Mr. Feinbaum, we love you. I, from bottom of my heart, I'm telling you, God is my witness. I love you, what you do, and I appreciate it. I know you don't like me, and it doesn't bother me, because I love you too much, man. I love to have fun. I know you love to have fun, but I will start calling in at 4 o'clock, sorry, the last hour. It seems like there's more spicy ingredients are there. I want to get some taste of it. My brother, I love you. I'm dancing right now, but I got to go holla.
We feel the same way, AC. Thank you for calling. First hour, we've already had John Adams on and Andy Staples. We have Cole Kubelik coming up, John Wilner, another number of other guests as we continue here. Your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. Can anybody match the energy of that man?
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.